The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
Now, the Department of Agriculture is in the process of developing the next 10-year strategy to succeed Foodwise 2025. An open policy debate on Ireland's agri-food strategy to 2030 was held at the Aviva Stadium yesterday to plan what are the key issues for the farming sector. I'm joined now by the Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Michael Creed. Minister, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, reaction to the DUP's early morning announcement that it's no, no, no.
Well, look, Pat, we're really at a time critical issue in terms of these negotiations. And whereas I don't wish to diminish the views of any party, DUP included, I think there is invariably going to be a lot of speculation. And I don't mean this in a pejorative sense, noise around these talks. And I think it's important to bear in mind that talks are ongoing.
So you're sanguine about this, that this is not the end. This no, 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 no to the consent arrangements, no to the customs arrangements, no to the VAT arrangements.
I'll tell you how sanguine I am about it, Pat. I'm going from the studios here back to my department to engage further in no deal planning this morning with senior management in my department, because I think it is important that we continue to prepare for that whilst hoping for the best. And I think there is perhaps some cause for optimism, but let's be realistic. These issues were never going to be easy. There is no text available. Those talks continue. I understand what the DUP has said. I've had a lot of engagement myself with people in Northern Ireland, particularly because of the all-island economy.
Sure.
And the
and we
sector.
Know that many farmers would prefer to remain. They don't want tariffs on foodstuffs or food ingredients.
I mean, I've had a lot of engagement with Ulster farmers and the Ulster Farmers Union. A lot of people whom I would suspect are unionists by inclination, who are appalled at the prospect of a no-deal Brexit. So I think, you know, it's time to hold our nerve here, but it is also important to say that the challenges are significant. The talks continue, but no deal preparations continue also.
Yeah, now, this is a problem. When you're trying to develop a food strategy and a strategy for the agricultural sector, and you don't know whether Brexit is happening or not, I mean, you're whistling in the wind in a way, because if Brexit happens and it's a hard Brexit, a tough Brexit, and even with a deal, eventually tariffs will be negotiated or a lack of tariffs, you don't know. So it's like planning in the dark.
Well, look, Brexit is one challenge and very significant, and I don't diminish it. And we've been dealing with that in terms of diversifying and looking to new markets. But I mean, the scope of the challenges we face in the context of a new strategy for the agri-food sector are much more than just Brexit, significant in all as that is. So exporting.
Sure, there are more challenges, but the picture changes completely. If you've got a tariff-free situation between the UK, both Northern Ireland and the island of Britain, then it's easy peasy. We keep selling them our beef. We keep selling them our milk products, our cheeses, our cheddar particularly. That's all great. If, on the other hand, there are massive tariffs on our cheddar going into the biggest market for cheddar, it changes the dynamic completely.
Well, it does, Pat, and I am hugely conscious of that in terms of the, you know, nearly over 5 billion euros worth of exports that we put into the UK and 50% of our beef. But I also have to be conscious, and this is why this consultation process is still ongoing and open, and we will hopefully pull together all the threads of a new strategy by the middle of next year. But I mean, we have to also look at what are the international consumer trends. You know, in the mature European market, they may be very different to the trends that are in the Asian market and the Chinese market.
So you're talking about people maybe giving up beef and stuff like that, although there's no sign of the burger joints closing down.
Well, if you look at the European market generally, it's static on beef consumption. On the other hand, in the Asian market and the Chinese market, increasing middle classes with disposable income are looking towards more westernised dietary habits. So there's opportunity for us. The climate change agenda. I mean, as we want to.
But aren't those two contradictory? You know, we're told that our production of beef leads to more global warming, and we're, you know, trying to be green, and then you're trying to encourage the Asians to eat more meat. which is counter to the climate agenda.
What the point I was going to make is we equally have to be conscious of what consumers are asking for. And it's no longer, you know, a pass to say we have safe and nutritious and traceable food. They're also saying increasingly, what are you doing about animal welfare? What are you doing about antimicrobial resistance? What are you doing to drive down your carbon footprint? And in the markets that we really want to be in, which is where the higher value added, perhaps better informed consumers are, the ones that will pay a little bit more, we need to embrace those challenges as well. And I think one of the other issues that will inform this process is the renegotiation of the Common Agricultural Policy, because therein is the opportunity to give us the toolbox to encourage farmers to deal with a lot of these challenges.
But we'll be missing the contribution that Britain would have made to the EU budget. So that's going to be a bit of a challenge. Fisheries, that's also part of your domain. And we don't know what way the fisheries thing is going to be resolved post-Brexit.
No, I mean, this is, I mean, a really big challenge in a no-deal Brexit. It is almost existential for a third of the industry, because we would be losing access to UK waters, where up to 40% of our business is conducted. It's a signal of how successful our membership of the European Union has been insofar as we've been able to grow our industry out into those waters. Whereas,
and you might think that we could therefore take the catch that the Brits would catch in our waters, but then the other EU members are entitled to come in. If they've been thrown out of British waters, they'll fish in ours.
Yes, and the critical issue, Pat, is in the withdrawal agreement that was negotiated and which is still on the table and which we need to remain vigilant on, the protection that was there for our fishing industry was that in the context of the getting to a stage where we're negotiating the future trading relationship after a transition period, that we link in fisheries and access to UK waters with the broader trade agreement. In other words, that we want to remain fishing there, and if they want to passport their financial services into the from the City of London into the European Union, or if they want access to open skies, that we link those. So
in other
that
words,
we get the
it's
best
a, it's a trade-off, a barter has to happen. Now, at the Aviva yesterday, Joe Healy, the president of the IFA, is talking about, you know, it's all very well to have these ambitious targets for food production, and there's a global demand for more food, high quality food, but what about the farmer who's producing that food? What about their incomes? I mean, some of them are on the floor, and you talk about existential threats to some of our fisheries. There are existential threats to some farmers. They're just not viable.
I'm acutely aware, and indeed have had a lot of conversations with the farm organisations about these matters. I think the targeting of resources through the cap is one thing. I think it's also about playing to the strengths that we have and making sure that in the supply chain we deliver a fairer share of the price that consumers ultimately pay back to the primary producer. So things like the unfair trading practices regulation, which we're transposing now into domestic law, bringing greater transparency along the supply chain is one thing, as well as moving as quickly as we can up the value-added chain so that...
Yeah, you know, but the farmer might be producing absolutely wonderful beef, but the processors are not paying him the money that they will accrue when they sell that fillet steak in a supermarket in France or in Stockport.
Pat, I have been privileged in this position to travel a lot. You have internationally as well. The quality of Irish food is without any equivalent international.
Yeah. I mean, I heard someone talk about on one of the Vox Pops or one of the comments in a show that this woman said in America, even if they put tariffs on Kerrygold, she loves it so much she'll still pay the money.
Yes, I mean, we have a phenomenal product, and the important thing is to continue the endeavour to premiumise it rather than to commoditise it. So moving up the value-added chain is really important.
But the processor takes the cream.
Yes, and a couple of things, you know, ensuring through the cap that we target resources at those who are most in need of it, but also maximising the opportunity that's out there because of, I mean, we have a story to tell, provenance of our production systems, that resonates internationally in terms of family-based production systems, grass-based production systems.
But if farmers go out of business and their kids say, this is no life for me, I'm not going to continue, and whatever happens, maybe we develop ranch-type farming as people cede their farms to others. But the Beef Task Force... And we saw the trouble during the week, and we won't necessarily dwell on why the trouble was caused. But fundamentally, it's because price is not available to be talked about for some obscure reason to do with cartels and all the rest of it, that you can actually have minimum price for alcohol in the supermarkets, but you can't guarantee the poor farmer a minimum price for his beef.
Well, Pat, let's be clear about it. Minimum unit pricing for alcohol is with the specific objective of damaging and declining consumption is the objective. What we are trying to do on the other side is to promote consumption of beef.
Yeah, but so it doesn't matter what your motivation is. If you have a mechanism by which you can control price right across a sector, it seems to me that it's only under maybe pressure from the processors that you're invoking this thing. Oh, you can't talk about price. Price is at the heart of what the farmers want talked about. So little bits of levies here and levies there and some rules about the age of the cattle when they're slaughtered and all that sort of stuff to suit a particular market, which derives from the time when CJD and BSE was a threat. That's where that came from. It's not relevant anymore. And yet the farmers are excluded from talking about the very thing that they want to talk about.
Well, I mean, one of the things which we do all the time, Pat, is we compare what our prices are in the Irish market for cattle that are slaughtered with the EU average and other member states. And we're in there at the moment below marginally the European average. But bear in mind, we have to export 90% of our animals into that market. So there is a cost in that itself.
OK, but really what you're saying is that the way we produce our cattle is not cost effective, because clearly in Europe, if they're selling beef into the processors at a similar enough price, they're obviously able to make money out of it or they wouldn't be doing it.
But they are primarily producing in those countries that we're competing against for their own domestic market. We are the biggest net exporter of beef in the Northern Hemisphere, biggest net exporter. So we're exporting into their market. And the imperative is that we continue to try and premiumise what we're doing. And in the context of markets that aren't working, that we deliver income support rather than price support. And we did so in terms of 100.
Who do you want to feed into this process in terms of developing a policy for the next
We need all the stakeholders and we need all the people who will challenge perhaps the comfort zone that the industry has been in. So we need the environmental and climate input. We need the farm organisations. We need the processors. We need the thought leaders. We need the people who are informed by what international market and consumption trends are. We need to square up to all of those challenges.
And would you welcome submissions from Joe Citizen?
Absolutely so. I mean, okay. They're imperative.
OK. Now, before I let you go today, you've got great news for your constituents. I mean, there was a lot of debate about the road to Castlebar from Westport and vice versa and how much it's costing. You've managed to, and you and your colleagues, 280 million for a bit of road between Kerry and Cork.
Bitter road, Pat. The N22 has been around as a political issue since Adam was a boy, and I'm delighted. You know, look, success has many parents, and I'm delighted to be in Cabinet delivering it. The cost-benefit analysis of this is probably the highest for any infrastructure piece that the government has approved.
What will it deliver? I mean, it's going to bypass Macroom and Ballyvourney.
Yes, yeah. It'll go all the way from the county bounds to east of Macroom town. Regional development, quality of life, rural Ireland,
I've often talked about that road through Ballyvourney, and you get this thing telling you to slow down if you speak Irish. It says Mull, right? And I'm thinking, and I said it before in this programme, the two Americans driving along in their rented car, hey honey, there's a mall coming up. Let's go shopping.
Well, you are in the Musgrave Gaeltacht, which is part of my constituency. I would say it's equally of benefit over the county bounds, and my colleague Brendan Griffin, who's the Minister of State actually in the Department of Transport, was of significant benefit to us in terms of getting...
Okay, what will it knock off the journey between Tralee and Cork, for example, because we're talking about 5 minutes between Westport and Castlebar from 20 minutes to 15. That was the criticism from the Greens. What will it do to the Cork-Kerry journey?
Well, listen, I live in the town of Macroom on the western side of it, and I have been on Friday evening stuck in traffic coming through Macroom town for half an hour.
Okay.
So that's just one segment of it. It's the cost-benefit analysis of this project is very, very significant.
Timescale?
It's a 3-year construction project.
Okay, so in 3 years, you'll whiz past Ballyvourney, no more Cúpla Focal and the Gaeltacht.
Yeah, but I think it also opens up an opportunity for those places to kind of reinvent themselves now.
And breathe without having to breathe in the noxious fumes from the passing trucks. Minister for Agriculture, Michael Creed, thank you very much for joining us.